WNZF.
The following programs contain information and personal opinions expressed by the participants and are not necessarily those of Flagler Broadcasting staff, management, or advertisers.
This is Pierre Tristram, editor of Flagler Live, with your weekly reality check. The empty theater of dodged questions and grandstanding senators that were the Amy Barrett hearings were difficult to take seriously even for daytime TV. Her dogmatism should not be, though conveniently for her choreographers, the election year politics of her appointment have obscured her embrace of regression. Whether this was year one or the last month of his presidency, the acting president had every right to nominate her, and the Senate has every right to confirm her, as it will. Of course, it's a stolen seat, as was Neil Gorsuch's, as was John Marshall's in 1801, when John Adams appointed him Chief Justice with just days left in his term. But Democrats would have stolen seats of their own if they'd had the chance. They wouldn't be talking court packing otherwise. Thankfully, it won't happen on Joe Biden's watch. He knows his FDR. That leaves us with a replacement of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, as cynical as George Bush's replacement of Thurgood Marshall with Clarence Thomas in 1991, a mullah replacing a justice in both cases, or fundamentalism hiding under the hijab of originalism. Except that when Thomas was appointed, the court was still fairly balanced and not yet a vassal to the religious right. With Barrett's appointment, Thomas is no longer the sadist from the fringe. He's the originalist's second coming, with Barrett as handmaid. Sexist as this may sound, it's actually central to Barrett's biography, or at least those parts of her biography that, submissive to political correctness when convenient, her reactionary coddlers on the Senate Judiciary Committee never dared ask her about. Barrett is not a mere Catholic. She's a charismatic, Pentecostal Catholic, a member of a church given to speaking in tongues, celebrating misogyny, banning gays and lesbians, relegating contraception and abortion to red light districts, if that, and deriding all things secular as demonically inferior to a life in Christ. Barrett herself was a so-called handmaid of Christ in the church's leadership, a term not taken from Margaret Atwood's novel about the transformation of America into a theocracy, where women are reduced to vessels for insemination and procreation, but from the membership directory of Barrett's church in Indiana. Pentecostal theology and Islam are indistinguishable in most regards, but imagine if Barrett were Muslim. She'd be smeared the way Keith Ellison was when he became the first Muslim to serve in Congress, the way Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib still routinely are by Trump and his brown shirts, even though these individuals are in fact archetypes of moderation and secularism compared with Judge Barrett. But because Barrett bears the all-absolving halo of Christian, she gets a pass. Had she been a member of a club that banned blacks or Jews, or Catholics for that matter, as they once so often were, even a nostalgic for the good old days of segregation like Lindsey Graham, who chairs the Senate Judiciary Committee, would have found it impossible to confirm her. Yet, she was an actual member of the board of a school that expressly bans children of unmarried or gay parents, which is no different than if it banned black or non-Christian children. Didn't matter. She's a Christian, and Christian bigotry gets a pass. That's who's getting confirmed to the Supreme Court. We don't have to imagine what Barrett's jurisprudence will look like regarding gay rights, abortion, women's rights, even human rights, and the separation of church and state. The Handmaid's Tale is no longer fiction. It's about to be serialized at the Supreme Court. This is Pierre Tristram, editor of Flagler Live, your 24-hour online news source. Thanks for listening.
9 minutes after 9 o'clock, Pierre Tristram, Flagler Live, making a difference in Flagler County. Love them or not, we do, and that's why we have them on the radio, or we wouldn't have them on. Right, Bob?
Yes, sir.
Hey, Brian McMillan.
So you love everybody you have on the radio?
Yeah. Otherwise, we don't put them on.
We love everybody, right?
Yeah, we actually do. Actually, there's we get along with everybody in town, but one person. That's not a
bad. Who's
that? I'll tell you later.
Uh-oh.
Anyway, good morning, everybody. It's Free for All Friday. I'm David Ayers. We also have Bob Snyder, Flagler Health Department, here for a quick update, and we'll get to that. Rick Staley, our sheriff, also with a great program that is he started called Inside Out Dads. And so we're going to be talking with Rick and also the jail chief, and we're going to go to the Green Roof Inn and talk to an inmate, and also we'll talk with Leisha Turner, who is a mom and has some kids and somehow participating in the program. We'll fill in the blanks with that. And also we have John Winston with AMP, who's been on, has been a while with the African American Mentoring Program. Mm-hmm. But basically, in one sentence, Rick, the purpose of your program and everything, what's the end result you're hoping for with it?
Well, there's really two end results. We're hoping that when the fathers that are in jail get released, that they become active in their children's lives so that the child now has a father. And studies have shown that when fathers are active in their children's lives, the children are less likely to go and commit crime. They do better in school, less likely of committing suicide. So there's really two things that we're hoping here. You stop the generational cycle of crime going by generations. The father did crime, now the son does crime, and so forth. So we're hoping to stop that and then turn the inmate's life around.
Okay, great. We're going to dig into that a little bit, and interesting program. And like I say, you know, hey, we can't fix the whole country, but we can fix Flagler County. And so then we'll go from there. And speaking of who's fixing Flagler County, our health department, Bob Snyder, what's going on with COVID or anything else in your world?
Oh, well, David, thank you. It does take a village, everyone. And I think we've reported compared to 67 other counties, you know, us and Brevard are among the places that have on a per capita basis a low case rate for COVID. Let's continue with some positive news here, okay? Hospitalizations are not in the double digits. There were 8 related to COVID. Our positivity rate, David, is 4.6%. We want it to be less than 5, which it is. We have no clusters or outbreaks in our nursing homes, long-term care facilities, and in our jail system. So great job, Sheriff, to you and your team and the medical directors over at the jail. No clusters in our school system. So overall, we are doing well compared to others. We are on a daily basis, David. You can see here we're going up and down. 2 or 3 days this week, we had cases that numbered 8, numbered 5. But yesterday, we saw 20. So we're kind of going up and down. And we're seeing that statewide. We're watching that very carefully. You know, Florida is among the 30 states that are seeing an uptick, most likely related to more indoor activity, a little cooler weather. We're seeing that in our western and Midwest states. So that's something to look for. Our ER visits related to COVID-19 are up. So we'll watch that also. But everyone, right, the message is still the same. Washing our hands, social distancing and mask wearing. We got to hang in there, get folks, just a few more months. And wait for that vaccine to come. And we'll still need to practice good public health measures even when that starts. But overall, David, we're in good shape here. We're seeing ticks up and down. But hang in there, everyone. This will pass. And this will go away.
And then when we have a vaccine, we're going to have you come in to convince people to take it.
Yes, and we'll wait for that next time.
All right, Bob.
Well, David, I don't like shots, okay, but this is one that I will get as soon as it comes out.
Thank you, Sheriff. Thank you.
What kind of shots are you talking about?
Yeah.
Like a 45 or
shot
30?
Of bourbon.
I've been shot on duty. I certainly don't like those.
Okay.
Did it hurt when you got shot with a bullet?
It hurt, yes.
Yep. Okay. I've heard, you know, some people say they didn't know they got shot.
I didn't realize my arm, okay, until I started feeling the burning sensation. The one in the chest, I felt immediately.
What did you think? Like, oh no.
I'm glad I have this bulletproof vest on.
Yeah, well, there was a couple things that went through my mind that night or that afternoon. Actually, it was the morning, 10:20 in the morning. I was 21 years old. I always wondered how I was going to die, and now I know. That was the first thing that I remember. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I was wondering if my vest worked because the vest may stop the bullet, but your body still absorbs the impact. So I had cracked ribs. I had a bruise from it that you can still see today. So, you know, you're taking in all that kinetic energy. So
did it knock you down?
Oh, yeah. It knocked me down. Yeah, it did that. But, you know, you had to get back up and fight because either you were going to die if you didn't.
So. Mm-hmm. Wow. All right. Well, the shot we're talking about, is, and he doesn't like those either, right?
I do not. I remember in the emergency room, the nurse came up to me, and she goes, well, I have to give you a tetanus shot and a pain shot. And I said, I really don't like shots. And she goes, I said, look, I know I've been shot, but I really don't like shots. And she goes, well, I'll combine them. So she gives me this shot. But the pain didn't go away, so she came back, and I said, hey, the pain's still here? She goes, oh, I forgot to combine them. Well, why couldn't you have given me the pain one first?
And she's like, don't be such a baby, right?
I'm a man. Aren't we that way, right?
That's right. We're all mama's boys when it comes right down to it. And anyway, Bob Snyder, thanks a lot. You have a great weekend.
All right. Really appreciate this opportunity, David. Thank you for keeping everyone informed.
All right. Keep us safe. We're going to be back with more. We're going to have Dan Engert, jail chief, Alicia Turner, also John Winston with AMP, and an inmate at the Green Roof Inn, and Rick Staley, Brian, and me and you and all that. Stand by. We'll be back.
I'm Alan Lowe, candidate for mayor of Palm Coast. Melissa Holland has attacked me in a racially motivated political TV ad that falsely claims I am guilty of criminal misconduct. Nothing is further from the truth. I have absolutely no criminal past whatsoever. Holland's campaign created a phony website to launch these false attacks in the country of Panama, a place where you don't have to register ownership of a website and where drug cartels routinely launder money. But worse than that, she used a photo of me with a person of color in her racist political TV ad and directly implied that this man, because he is black, is a criminal. Nothing could be further from the truth. This man has a name. It is Philip. And he is a survivor of Hurricane Maria, a deadly Cat 5 hurricane that brought devastation to the island of Dominica in 2017. Philip lost everything in that storm. I met him when I was there as part of a humanitarian relief effort that brought food, water, and comfort to those who desperately needed it. Now Philip has become a pawn in Melissa Holland's desperate political game to get reelected mayor of Palm Coast. Shame on you, Melissa Holland. No wonder why you have multiple complaints filed against you with the Florida Ethics Commission, and your administration is under investigation by the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, the Florida State Attorney General's Office, and the FBI. But more despicable than all that is your blatant attempt of targeted racist abuse of a black man you don't even know. Thanks to you, Melissa Holland, Philip is not only a victim of Hurricane Maria, he is now a victim of your desperate and shameless campaign for re-election.
Paid for by Alan Lowe for Mayor. I'm Alan Lowe, and I approve this message.
I invented it. We manufacture them in Bunnell, and we sell them worldwide. Hi, I'm Curtis, and I invented InvisiCook. It's an induction cooking method that allows you to cook on your existing countertops. Put your pan on your countertop, scramble eggs in 30 seconds, fry a fish in 2 minutes, and put your hand on the countertop as soon as you're done. InvisiCook, what you don't see won't burn you. Tour our factory and buy direct. Call me anytime, 263-8578. InvisiCook, 263-8578. InvisiCook.com.
It'll save you a lot of money in the long run.
Save on paint.
Save on labor.
And saves you time.
All Benjamin Moore exterior paints on sale now.
Come in, pick out your colors, and choose your painter.
You'll get more at Benjamin Moore. Corner of Old Kings and Utility Drive.
Palm Coast.
Hi, I'm Will from On the Block Barbers, located on Flagler Beach next to the new Johnny D's. Come down for a hot towel shave and great service with a smile. On the Block Barbers, Flagler Beach.
It's after 9 o'clock, Free for All Friday. I'm David Ayers, and stepping up, all the microphones are red hot right now. John Winston knows all that. You were a TV anchor in New York back in the day. ABC, were you not?
ABC, WKBW.
WKBW. Let's give us an ID. So let's hear your ID. Go ahead and say it.
This is WKBW TV. Do you know where your children are?
I love it. That's a good one.
Well, now, yeah. we have to hear yours, because that could be confusing. What if people think they're actually listening to KB?
we'll get an FCC fine for a false ID.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
John Winston, good to have you back. And you're a hero to me. We've worked many years with the African American Mentoring Program, and that ties in a good partnership with our Sheriff's Department. Sitting over there on microphone number one, Dan Ingert, and he is the Court and Detention Chief of Service Chief, right? Is that close to your right title?
That's right on.
Okay, great. And Rick, we were talking with Brian McMillan over there, editor. That's an easy title. And the program that there were some statistics. Dan, you had some. Do you want to start off with some statistics? We're going to be talking about the Inside Out Dads program. But just start off with some statistics here that might shock people. And then we're going to talk about how we can make a difference. So go ahead, Dan. Give us some stats here.
Well, I guess the visual problem for America's children, that currently there's 2.7 million children with a parent in prison or jail. 92% of parents in prisons are fathers. And the number of children with a father in prison has grown by 79% since 1991. So I think that, you know, kind of underscores the father factor that we have going on in the nation right now.
Okay. And John, you follow all these? That's where you hear what give us what is going on in your world.
The statistics bear fact into the way they're calculated. But in a real sense, this is a problem facing America that is now literally pandemic in and of itself, because it's spreading like wildfire. And certainly today we get a chance to explore that and be able to really take hold of the effect it's having on our families.
Mm-hmm. And the word family seems to be the real whole critical thing to it. I mean, because we're like, this is what the base of our society is.
Well, that's true, David. And when the family breaks down is when you see a lot of other problems in society. So whether it's homelessness, whether it's addiction, whether it's alcohol or drugs, crime, suicide, and those kind of things. And, you know, for what we're talking about, 85% of the youth that are in jail today came from a fatherless home.
And this is in Flagler County you're talking about? Or
no, overall. National statistics show that. I don't have specific Flagler numbers for that. But that just shows you, Chief Ingert talked about the adults in jail and their fathers and stuff like that. But that just shows the impact that it has on society, on the system. When one parent's in jail, quite often the child, because of feeling abandoned or a variety of other issues, follows that footstep.
And we're not just talking minority families, we're talking all families, because when there's no dad there, I mean, I was blessed, you know, have a dad, still do. John, what about you when you were a kid?
We have to look at it.
What about your family when you were growing up?
For me, family is the solid core of the Black African-American family. We're seeing today a misnomer. We hear a lot of untrue statements being made. We are living with the threat of families falling apart, both Black and white, no matter who we are, because of the amount of economic pressure and, as it relates to the Black community, historic racism and bigotry that has transcended itself into what becomes an infectious disease, and young people trying to escape from it, doing it in all the wrong ways. I'll explore that later as we talk.
And at the end of the program, we're going to give a phone number if you would like to be a volunteer and help John and his program that has just done a lot of things. I've known you for 10 years, I think, and you've been doing that and doing a lot of great things. We're going to talk about that. The Inside Out program, you said it's out to accomplish two different things. Can you expound on the first one a little more?
Well, the first one is let's give the inmates that eventually are going to come back into our community, whether they're being sentenced to a state correctional facility or sentenced to a county jail time. And quite often they have children. And so how do they remain a father and support their child while they're in a facility, locked up, and then give them the tools to support their child. And I'm not talking just about financially, but emotionally, and how to be in their child's life when they get out. So the one goal is for the father, and then the other goal is the child, because statistically we know that, and these are national statistics, so it's not specific to Flagler, that 71% of high school dropouts are from a fatherless home. And, you know, my parents divorced when I was 11. So I understand those kind of pressures. And although my dad has passed now, I can remember after the divorce, he was pretty much an absent father. And it wasn't until the later years that, you know, he kind of came back in, because he was out doing his own thing, I guess. But so I do remember, you know, the impact that has. Fortunately, I didn't drop out of high school. I didn't become one of these statistics.
Mm-hmm. Brian, you had a comment?
Yeah, I just think that it's so easy for it to become a cyclical problem in a family, generation after generation. I mean, how do you know how do you know what a good father is unless you have one, unless you see it? And then you grow up, you know, thinking that a father is, you know, absent or not, you know, or just the person who helps pay the bills, but, you know, isn't really involved in your life. And then you know, it's not like you're doomed to repeat that, but it does seem likely that, you know, if that's the example you have, then that's more likely what you're going to do. So bringing, I think this program, it's a national program that is now at the jail. I interviewed one of the inmates. I'm not sure if that's who we're going to talk to later or not, but, the idea that you could take someone who is probably in that cycle and pull them out, it just has such a long lasting impact. It has a potential for that, and so I think it's just a great thing.
You know, it's we all have to understand that in trying to rehabilitate someone, you got to walk a mile in their shoes. You got to know what and who they came from. What kind of background did they have that helped lead them to this point in their life? And many, for instance, African-American families. I came from a family of a very hardworking, determined man that made a decision, two things in my life. I won't accept something for nothing, and neither will my children. We're going to work for everything. So that unity was always there, built from the days of, because he was just one generation out of slavery. And his backbone was his calling card for life. He taught it to us. We had that ethic throughout our entire lives. I've tried to pass it on. Like Rick, I came from a solid family, but there was times that we didn't always have things together like we would have liked for them to be. My wife and I are a combined family. We put the Brady Bunch together, if you will. We now have 55 grandchildren.
Wow.
35 great-grands and 20 grand.
So I'm glad I'm not paying your Christmas bill today.
You don't want a new Christmas bill. Or birthdays, brother. But it bears to know that was our beginning. But today, the disjointed family at all levels is the causative reason while we're experiencing what we are as far as recidivism, and the fact that you're seeing so many African-American young men who have suffered through their own beginning and wound up in this position they're in today.
John, go ahead. You used the term, I remember, called no daditis.
No daditis. It's a disease that is... It knows no boundaries. It is not discriminatory one way or another. It touches all families. The problem is, how do we solve it? What do we do? And I think mentoring, as we talked about, especially among indigenous people who have had this infamous background, has a lot to do with changing that.
I'd like to say good morning to Leisha Turner. Good morning, Leisha.
Good morning.
Good morning. I would allow, I think, who lined up Leisha? We'll let you do an introduction. Dan, was that?
Yeah, Leisha is one of our participants. She is the mother of his three children, and he's been participating in the program since its inception. And so we reached out to a number of the mothers, and just to see what their perspective was on their husband's progress through the program. And she was very willing to and excited to talk about her experience with her husband in the program.
Leisha, if you want to go ahead and just kind of tell us a little about you and your family and the situation you're in.
My name is Aisha, and the situation, you know, it just happened, but the program has really helped us out, is giving him the understanding of, you know, better parenting with the kids, and especially while inside, and it's also, you know, have helped, you know, us with better in our relationship and stuff. I see him, you know, changing a lot more than what he would have did, you know, like without the classes and stuff. I feel like when he come home, he'll be a better person, and he's ready for, you know, a new life and stuff.
How old are your kids, Aisha?
13, 10, and 2.
Okay. And are right now, are you basically raising them on your own?
Yes. Okay. Having to work extra overtime, and it's hard because I'm remote schooling now, and the little one isn't in school, and it's really hard because he was he is a big help in our family. He's there. We are a family oriented, like we do everything together, and, you know, this program, that's why I say, like, this program is really helping us, like, better our lives for our kids and stuff.
How do you, and you participate in the classes as well with your, is it your husband or boyfriend? Who is the inmate?
Boyfriend. I don't participate in them. He does them, but he calls me and tells me about them. And, you know, it's like, you know, it really makes me happy what he's learning and stuff in them and stuff. And I feel like I'm being understood from what I've been trying to, you know, talk to him about and stuff. But he's liking it, and I'm liking it also.
Aisha, can I just ask you, what role was he playing centrally in your family?
The head, the protector, the you know, he was like, everything was like 50-50 with us. But, you know, he's the, I don't know specifically how to say what role, but, you know, he was the main person or whatever, like, you know, just like me or whatever.
But he would provide for money. He helped out. He had a job and made money and helped you there.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. He was working with the Stricklands for Fayetta Lawn Care.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So he played an active role, in other words. I mean, he was there,
yes,
trying.
Okay. So he wasn't,
yes,
absent. He was, yes, a part of it before getting in trouble.
But, yes, and he plays a major role in the kids' lives. He, you know, he helped with homework and, you know, just, mm-hmm, disciplining them and keeping them on track and stuff. And even since, you know, he's been going, that has been changing some with the kids. I guess they're, you know, they're acting out and stuff or whatever. But we're just doing the best that we can and hoping he can come home soon.
Okay, Rick?
So, you know, part of the purpose for this program is to have our inmates understand the impact that when they're in jail or they commit a crime and it takes them away from their family, that it has on the family unit and the children. And so I think what I'm hearing is that he's learning that in this program.
Yes.
And relating it to her on these phone calls. So you know, that's a great start. And it's not an easy program because we started with many more in the program. Then they found out they actually had to work and study and all that. And, mm-hmm, about 50% dropped out because we can't make them take the program, obviously. But, you know, the group that's still in there, they're serious. They want to learn. They want to improve their life. And so I commend Isha and the inmate there.
Yeah, I had a chance to experience that when Rick took us on a tour of the facility, and two of the inmates spoke with us and explained to us the how important it was that someone was reaching out to them and someone was trying to help them, not in a talking sense, but in a hands-on, we're going to help you get through this method. And that's what we need. It's a good program.
And that's one of the goals of our facility, is that we want to stop the revolving door as much as we can. So if we can give the inmate the tools to be successful in their personal life and be productive citizens, that's our goal. And what's interesting about our inmate facility is that, unlike most inmate facilities across the country, the majority of the inmates in our facility are white. And I want everybody that's listening to understand this is a program, regardless of your ethnic background, for the fathers in the jail to learn how to be a father.
What about, I know that's a great, you know, part of it, to get the inmate, the male part of the family. And also, you have to say that, you know, a lot of these guys, they're really kids having kids.
Babies.
When you look at it, just because suddenly you have a child, you're not a man, you're still a kid. And there's a lot to be learned in life when you look back with it that way.
Right. My impression from talking to inmates over the years, including recent ones, is that... I'm trying to put this delicately, but it seems that sometimes the decision was to have a relationship. It wasn't that I wanted to start a family, but the family happens, and the question is, you know, what do you do then? And it just takes sacrifice and commitment and love to be a parent, and you have to be responsible, and people in society, we just have to decide that we're ready for that and make sure to plan accordingly.
Aisha, question, and God love you, you know, for being a great mom and holding everything together and working hard, and, you know, you're a special. What could having a boyfriend come back and be a part of the family, obviously, number one, what are some other things that you could use help with?
With bills or anything like that?
Well, anything.
Or like schooling or something. Anything. I need utility help, like a tutor or something. Well, I'm trying to communicate with the kids with their schooling and stuff, but like I say, like, you know, they feel like dad isn't here, and he's the one that's on them, you know, usually, or he teaches them when he's home or whatever to do that or whatever, and it's just so hard with that, trying to do that on my own and communicate with and work and stuff or whatever, and then with the 2-year-old, you know, he's not in school, I don't really have no one for him or whatever, so it's like I kind of feel like I'm all over the place or whatever without his help. You know, he usually helps solve stuff or whatever, fix stuff for me, but anything. We're thankful and helpful for anything, and I would like to also say thank you, Sheriff Rick, for, you know, this program also, before I forget to do that.
Aisha, let me just compliment you on being as resourceful as many mothers are who have been put in your position. You're holding your family together. You right now are that glue. There is outreach available to you, and that is in the form of the school district and here in Flagler County, that we can supply, hopefully, some help for you through mentoring and other very outstanding programs that are available.
Very good.
And I just would like to add, too, that I would add that there's a third goal for this program as well, and I use this as a prime example of it, and that is for teaching the men to reconnect with the mothers, if possible. And oftentimes that isn't possible, but one of the core sessions, and there's 12 core sessions that they will all go through, and then there's four reentry sessions that go right to the basics of budgeting and just the practical tools that they need. But one of the core sessions that they are learning to, and Aisha, Chris hasn't even got to this one yet, but very soon he's going to be going through the session on co-parenting and working with mom and connecting with mom and understanding mom. So that's, you know, there's a goal for not only skill building with the fathers, but also reconnecting with their children and also developing better relationships with the children's mothers as well.
Okay. Hey, we have to move on. Anybody have anything else for Aisha before we go on here?
But Aisha, let me ask you this. Have you been able to find any assistance from the standpoint of training for yourself? How far did you go in school?
I went to 12th grade, but I didn't finish. I'm currently trying to, you know, finish my GED, but with everything that's going on, it seems like I'm going at a turtle pace, and it's kind of stressing that, you know, I feel like I'm not getting anywhere when I want to be past where I'm at.
Have hope. You are a determined young woman. You can do this. I can tell you. Many of us sitting here have gone through many changes in life. And yes, you can. You've got to believe that and know that I would continue my education, do all that you can to complete, and there are going to be a lot of programs available to help you.
Aisha, thank you so much. Oh, by the way, you know what? Hey, you've won my heart over. WNZF, we're going to give you $500 for being on the show today, all right? So you go spend that.
Thank you.
We'll get it to you. I'll give it to Chief Dan here, and we'll get you a check from WNZF to go have a great weekend and do something nice with the kids, okay?
All righty, thank you.
All right, you have a good one, Aisha. Great meeting you and talking with you. We're going to go out to the Green Roof Inn and talk to an inmate who is also a part of it. We heard from the mom side, and we're going to hear from the other side of it. Sounds like a great program. You've just tuned in. We're talking about Inside Out Dads, a program instituted by Sheriff Rick Staley. We have Dan Ingert here, who is the Chief of Court and Detention Services. Also, John Winston with the African-American Mentoring Program. Brian McMillan over on microphone number 5, and we've got you listening on the radio. We'll be right back.
My whole business just went up in flames, but my agent was there before the fire was out. We started a plan. I've got 25 employees who could be out of a job if we didn't get this place running again. My independent agent and auto owner's insurance, they made sure we didn't skip a beat. I mean, we didn't miss a single payroll. That's incredible.
For whatever lies ahead, we're always there.
In Flagler County, call the Haywood Brown Flagler Insurance Agency at 437-7767.
Dad, a man from Internal Revenue is here.
When the Internal Revenue Service comes after you, you need us. This is Bob from Flagler Tax Service. Audits, unpaid taxes, taxes for next year. Haven't paid your taxes in a while? We can get you back on track. Flagler Tax Service, next to the Chicken Pantry, downtown Bonneau.
He said he knows you're here. 793-7156.
Today's debate, Beaver Toyota versus Beaver Chevrolet. Why would someone buy a new car from you?
We have an exclusive 20-year, 200,000-mile warranty on every new vehicle. We offer a competitive wow price plus free oil changes.
Who has the best-selling vehicle?
We have the number one selling car in the world, the Toyota Camry. Well, we have the number one selling truck, the Chevy Silverado.
So when is the best time to buy a car?
Right now.
Come see why Beaver Toyota in St. Augustine and Beaver Chevrolet in Jacksonville deserve your vote.
This message has been approved by Linda Beaver.
9:45, not solving the problems of the world, but solving the problems of Flagler County. That's kind of nice about being in a small town, don't you think, Dan?
Absolutely.
Where are you from?
I'm actually from a small town in upstate New York, Barker, New York, town of Somerset. I was a town supervisor for 12 years, so I know all about small towns.
John Winston, you
from Buffalo.
From Buffalo.
Somerset is
just
very
outside.
Close.
Buffalo Bills fans?
I actually know I'm a Pittsburgh Steelers fan.
Well, we've got work to do.
All right, if you just tuned in, we are talking about the no daditis and families and mom. Great conversation with Aisha. What an awesome woman, and raising her kids, her boyfriend in jail. Rick's trying to help work with them on a program called Inside Out Dad, so when they come back into society, they not just are they doing it, but they want to do it. And I mean, that's the main thing, is to get people to realize, you know, how much they have right there and how important they are, maybe.
And let me mention, David, that this is all done at no cost to the taxpayers. We have volunteers that are actually trained to present and teach this program that come into the facility. So
you said, also, we're going to go out to the Green Roof Inn here in just a minute and talk to one of the inmates directly who is involved in the program. But you had said also that this sets up when kids, you know, are not, there's no dad and they're out there, that it really sets them up. That's what the gangs prey on to recruit. You can talk about that for a second.
That's exactly right. So what happens is when children feel abandoned, they're looking for someone to fill that void. And that is usually how gangs recruit into their gang, if you will. The Bloods or, you know, Gangster Disciples, you name it. There's different names for them. So one of the things, you know, that we're trying to do is stop this cycle, because as Brian said earlier, it's generational. It's the modeling that's being done by the father in this case that we're talking about is that, you know, you abandon your child because you're off in prison, so therefore they don't care about you because they committed a crime and went away. So they're looking for that father figure, and unfortunately many times they turn to the wrong group to do that.
So they feel more love from the gang than is that
John? It's a natural element, but you got to understand, let's not discount the father that happens to be incarcerated. They care, they love, they want to reach out. But yes, you make for fertile ground for the lawlessness that's in the community saying, come to me, I'll be your father. I've got another way for you to make more money than your dad ever thought about. So yeah, they're there. But also there are good people in the community who are equally as concerned and trying to reach out. We have to be that element of saying to them, there is another way. That is not your end. We can help you start a brand new beginning in your life. And we've got to do this more than we tend to be so involved with trying to deal with the element of crime itself to the extent of not finding ways to tear it apart.
Okay. Dan, we're going to go out to the county jail, otherwise branded as the Green Roof Inn. And there was no copyright violation in using that, like Brian reported in his Observer newspaper.
Actually, we have trademarked. We do have a trademark for the Green Roof Inn.
You do?
Yes, we do.
All right, Dan Ingert, we have on the phone here, so go ahead and we'll kind of let you carry the show here. Go ahead, take it.
Yeah, I believe that we have Commander Maselli, who is with an inmate who is participating in the program, and I think DeAndre is there, I hope.
Yes, sir. Good morning.
Good morning, DeAndre. So, DeAndre, when I was brought here and the sheriff appointed me, one of the things that I learned very quickly was Sheriff Staley requires results, and he's very results-driven. And when we put together programs, he wants evidence-based programs. And so the Inside Out Jail program is a nationally recognized evidence-based program that we've recently implemented, and you're one of the program's first participants. So we wanted to talk to you a little bit about how is the program impacting your life? Is it giving you some tools? Do you think you're better prepared to be a better father when you leave? Why don't you take us through some of the first steps of the program, DeAndre?
Oh, yeah, I love it. It's telling you, like, I don't know, first it's kind of like, I don't know, you have to look at yourself in the mirror in the first few lessons. It talks about, like, characteristics of a good father, but it asks personal questions, like, what are the characteristics you hold? Like, how a good father is seen in society. You know, I don't know. It's a lot of opinionated things, but they're all good lessons in a way.
And DeAndre, those are some difficult lessons, as I understand, because we started with twice as many guys that are in it now, because those first few lessons where you were kind of exploring yourself and looking at yourself in the mirror, that's difficult at times. And so why don't you talk a little bit about how that impacted the group, and did you see people kind of struggling with looking at themselves in the mirror?
I mean, yeah, it cuts deep sometimes, because when you got to sit and look at your own faults, you know, some people run from it. But, you know, I guess the only way to deal and, you know, come back from that is just go through it, you know.
What is it that you looked in the mirror, you're staying with a program, and what would you say to other inmates? Would you, you know, do you try to convince them that, hey, man, you know, this is something that you ought to do as well? I mean, what do you say to them?
I mean, even the ones who decide they don't want to attend, I like to go back to the block and, you know, just share what I learned, the good words of encouragement that I got throughout the day. Because, you know, I mean, I figure that's the point of the program. We learn, so we'll be able to teach others what we learn, you know, and then so on and so forth. That's how you break the cycle.
DeAndre, tell a little bit about your family, kids. How many kids do you have?
I have 4 children of my own. I have a stepdaughter, so I have 5. Technically.
Mm-hmm. So how do you envision your life? You know what it was before you went in. How do you envision your life, and how do you want to make it when you get out? What's your goals?
My goal is, well, I don't know, it changed. It used to be about having the most money, the biggest cars, but I've been incarcerated before. Actually, beginning of last year, I just got done with a state bid, and I spent more time with my kids, you know. It's different when you're, like, there hands-on from watching them grow up through pictures. And, you know, they have their own personalities. And, you know, they're so much like us. And I grew to love them. I grew real attached to them. So when I see that and I see what I went through as a child, I don't want that for other children. Not necessarily saying my childhood was bad. You know, my family put education on me and good morals and so on and so forth, but I didn't have anyone to teach me how to be a man. It was kind of like a trial and error thing. You know, I have 3 daughters and 2 sons, so, you know, I feel like my sons need to know, you know, firsthand on how a man should conduct themselves in society, and women need to know how a man should treat them.
Who was the influence in your life? Because you say you didn't have a dad. So who what were the influences in making DeAndre the person you are today, from other males or whatever?
Well, I had my uncle who was like a father to me, but, you know, he had his own situations with his children. He was hands-on as much as he could. I was raised in a house full of women. My mother, 2 sisters, grandmother, house full of women.
Okay. I mean, it appears, DeAndre, very obvious that you did have people who tried to reach out to you in your community, in your family. Is that correct?
Of course. I think you were mentoring at FPC around the time I was going. I think I had a conversation with you a few times.
What do you feel is the main element, therefore, that has caused you to have this repeating of various incidents that have brought you to where you are today?
I don't know, that feeling of being alone, like, okay, you got women in your life, but, you know, as a man, you talk, you know, to suck it up, don't show emotions, don't tell people your problems. I kind of just went on my own and tried to figure out things myself, and I didn't always make the best decisions.
What?
But, you know, every time I went through it, I kind of learned a little bit more, but I think I finally got it this time. You know, it took a while, but I think I finally figured it all out.
Let me ask you, John, with the African-American mentoring program, DeAndre does good here and with the program and everything. It seems to me like he could be a good mentor.
Very, very. That's a very, very important point. Our young men need to see the other side. We have men right now who have been incarcerated who are mentors, who have come back and they try to give of themselves to help lift these young men, as DeAndre is going through right now, who've been through basically the same style of life he has, who've suffered through all of it. The calling from the street, that element that got DeAndre and others in trouble, is still there, and he can speak from a unique standpoint of how not to go back there. And we, DeAndre, we'd like to talk to you once you've got finished the program, and it appears the program is helping you.
Oh yeah, I love the program. It's good to be able to talk to other people that has, you know, been through things similar. Because people who are actually active fathers, you know, that's the standpoint I feel like I was missing. I talked to a lot of people who are in the same situation as me, but I feel like I need an insight from people who are like in their children's lives on a daily basis, not just part-time fathers. So I like the program.
All right, DeAndre. Hey, it was a pleasure talking with you. And, you know, if out of this, if, you know, that'd be awesome if you do become a mentor with the African-American mentoring program. I think you would command full attention of some young boys that would look up to you for what you have been through and where you're going, and could make a big difference in a lot of other kids' lives right here in Flagler County.
DeAndre, before you go, could you tell us, what is your main goal now? What do you want to do once you step up as you have and you're out and you're now starting your life? What have you planned? What are your goals?
I just want to help break this cycle we got, because, you know, I tried my best to provide for my children and be a father for them, but now looking at it, my, you know, the mothers of my children are in the same position my mother was in when I was a child, and I hate seeing that. I just want to break this cycle.
Okay. Brian, a final comment for DeAndre?
Yeah, DeAndre, I got to spend a couple hours with him at the jail a week or two ago. It was really great to meet you and to see the, you just have this real kind of light in your eyes, and you can tell that there's some real good that you're gonna do with your life. And I'm excited to meet you, you know, again someday when you get out. And thank you for being such a good influence while you're there and trying to lift up other people.
You know, I would say the goal for our programs are always to graduate participants, to bring them back to the facility as peer advocates, because there's nothing more important to other inmates to see, you know, recovery or a change in action in a former inmate. So DeAndre is a, you know, wonderful example of that, and hopefully we'll be able to help him along the way to change that cycle when he gets out.
Okay. All right. Anything else here, final, before we let DeAndre? We can't let him go. I was going to say, before we let you go, we can't do that.
Well, that day's coming, I'm sure.
For sure.
I think, you know, he's a prime example of what we're trying to do with Inside Out Dad. And I'm hoping that he's learned from this. He's gotten the skill sets that he needs to be successful. So we don't need to hold a bed for him in the future.
Okay.
That's the goal.
Remember, Andre. DeAndre, say this to yourself and mean it. Never again. Never again. And keep that uppermost in your mind. Let that be the voice talking to you when you walk out that door.
And then I would just also add to DeAndre that if you know, that the bad voice when you're out starts talking again, reach out to someone. Reach out to John. Reach out to a sheriff's deputy, because we will help you stay on the right track.
All right. Well, you made a lot of friends today, DeAndre, and we'll follow you and anything that we can do. But I think it'd be great. I think you can help a lot of other people as your life moves forward. So take care. All right. Great talking to you.
All right. Thank you.
All right. That's DeAndre live from the Green Roof Inn. And we're going to take a break, and we will be back with a few other things for you here. We're going to go a little bit over time, but time well spent. Great discussion. And we'll be back with our guests in the studio, Dan Ingert. We have Rick Staley. We have John Winston and Brian McMillan. We'll be right back on Free for All Friday.
I'm Alan Lowe, candidate for mayor of Palm Coast. Melissa Holland has attacked me in a racially motivated political TV ad that falsely claims I am guilty of criminal misconduct. Nothing is further from the truth. I have absolutely no criminal past whatsoever. Holland's campaign created a phony website to launch these false attacks in the country of Panama, a place where you don't have to register ownership of a website and where drug cartels routinely launder money. But worse than that, she used a photo of me with a person of color in her racist political TV ad and directly implied that this man, because he is black, is a criminal. Nothing could be further from the truth. This man has a name. It is Philip, and he is a survivor of Hurricane Maria, a deadly Cat 5 hurricane that brought devastation to the island of Dominica in 2017. Philip lost everything in that storm. I met him when I was there as part of a humanitarian relief effort that brought food, water, and comfort to those who desperately needed it. Now Philip has become a pawn in Melissa Holland's desperate political game to get reelected mayor of Palm Coast. Shame on you, Melissa Holland. No wonder why you have multiple complaints filed against you with the Florida Ethics Commission, and your administration is under investigation by the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, the Florida State Attorney General's Office, and the FBI. But more despicable than all that is your blatant attempt of targeted racist abuse of a black man you don't even know. Thanks to you, Melissa Holland, Philip is not only a victim of Hurricane Maria, he is now a victim of your desperate and shameless campaign for re-election.
Paid for by Alan Lowe for Mayor. I'm Alan Lowe, and I approve this message.
I invented it. We manufacture them in Bunnell, and we sell them worldwide. Hi, I'm Curtis, and I invented InvisiCook. It's an induction cooking method that allows you to cook on your existing countertops. Put your pan on your countertop, scramble eggs in 30 seconds, fry a fish in 2 minutes, and put your hand on the countertop as soon as you're done. InvisiCook, what you don't see won't burn you. Tour our factory and buy direct. Call me anytime, 263-8578. InvisiCook, 263-8578, InvisiCook.com.
So you're ready to list it? We're ready to sell it. This is Sam Perkovich, broker owner of Parkside Realty Group. Stop by our office in Town Center or call us at 302-0300. Visit us online at ParksideRealtyGroup.net.
You don't think it'll happen to you twice. First, it was a fire. My agent was right there and helped me rebuild. Then the tornado destroyed everything again. Both times, my independent agent and auto owners took care of me like someone takes care of family.
For whatever lies ahead, we're always there. Auto Owners Insurance.
In Flagler County, call the Haywood Brown Flagler Insurance Agency at 437-7767.
A little bit after 10 o'clock, we're going to go long, but a great conversation, and I didn't want to leave today's program without letting you know how you can help. And John, with an awesome program called the African American Mentoring Program, and by the way, this is for everybody and anybody, so qualifications to be one of your African American mentors, John, what is it? What are the qualifications?
Be of good report of yourself. Want to make change in another individual's life. Be able to give to them those elements, those things that you thought were destructive in your own life, and how we can make a better life for this young person if they listen to this sage knowledge. We have right now at every level, our makeup starting back in 2019 when Dr. Jim Gines, the second only African-American elected to the school board, set up this program in conjunction with the Flagler County School District, made up of our volunteer men who come in each give of themselves are made up of doctors, lawyers, pipe fitters, plumbers, teachers, former retired military. We've had even a brigadier general involved. From all walks of life have come into the program trying to do all that they could to try to uplift and develop moral character with inside these young people to give them a fair shot at life. When you think about our historic history and where we've come from, these men bring a uniqueness to this community like you really have to see it to believe it. We have young men in colleges and universities right now all over the state of Florida and across the nation. We have young people that originally everyone said can't possibly make it. He comes from the background we just heard today from DeAndre's side, and young women in 2008 when our program expanded, where we went and developed the women's program of the AMP program, AMP, A-A-M-P, the African American Mentor Program. Today, because of Corona, because of the fact that most of our men were retired at late ages, we're in need of recruits desperately. We need other people to step in the role that many of our men are fading out of now, but still trying to work with them. We are going to have a unique meet and greet that the school district is setting up in November that will be announced, and we will ask you, David, to work with us in making that announcement. But this program is needed desperately. When you think about our successes, they were, in a very real sense, a lot of people didn't think it could possibly happen with some of the people we were focused on. But today, that broadening effect of the impact these men have had on the lives of the students here, we've increased graduation levels, we've increased academic levels, we've increased the possibility of them even considering going outside of their normal life cycle to reach out and try to go into unique programs in the building trades, for instance, electricians, plumbers. We're reaching, some of them are not going to go to colleges and universities. We understand that. So those that don't, we try to still steer them in the right direction. We have field trips that we take. We've brought them to the jail. We've brought them to the Manned Spacecraft Center, universities, colleges all over the state, all of the military bases within our areas. We've visited, including Georgia, to the submarine base. And today, we're very proud to see that we have young men serving in every branch of the United States military, except the Coast Guard. I don't think we've had one yet. But basically, this program's failures have been greatly outweighed by the success.
To get more information from you, and what about a family? Like if a family listening and says, you know, can we adopt? And can our family, you know, be a mentor rather than just one person one-on-one? Can a family be a mentor as a group?
We've had families that, through their support financially, who have donated, and even some of the family members have reached out and said, look, I will help a young man. Matter of fact, we had our first non-minority mentor that came on forth. On board, he referred to himself as the vanilla cupcake, and he turned out to be an unbelievable mentor who did a fantastic job with the almost 7 to 8 boys that he helped carry through the years straight through graduation. So, I mean, it's a program that I can give you, and I want you to know that it only requires about an hour a week. Where you, even if you no more than calling the child, talking to them on the phone. We meet with them individually at the schools, but because of Corona, we can't do that now. So we're going virtual. We're about to have virtual training for the mentors because we're unable at this point to speak to them and even go to their homes anymore.
John, we got to wrap it here. What is a phone number, website to get people to connect and learn more and hopefully be a part of it?
The best way and the fastest way is to call 386-437-7526. And that's Ms. Sabrina Crosby, who is our school district coordinator. And she handles all of the outreach programs of the district. Again, that's 386-437-7526, extension 1175. Extension 1175, Sabrina Crosby.
And if you miss that, you're going to give us a call at the radio station. We'll pass that on to you.
So, please.
Okay. Well, Chief Dan Ingbert here. Just a great program and a very, very good program today. Good to have you in here.
Thank you.
Final words for people.
I just want to thank Sheriff Staley for his support and really his prodding to get this program up and running. It was on my chart at the beginning of the year, and he kind of kept reminding me to get this thing up and running. So as this year went on, we got it taken care of, and we're thankful for his support of all of the initiatives that we're putting forward in the jail.
All right, Sheriff Staley, final words.
Well, I really appreciate DeAndre coming on and being willing to show the inside of the program and of course, the mother that came on. But, you know, we're always looking for volunteers to help in our inmate programs, just like John's looking for mentors. So if anybody wants to do that and support this program, go through the training or any of our other programs, because all of our inmate programs are generally volunteer, and we have a lot of programs. So you can call us at 386-586-4891, and we can hook you up.
Okay. Brian McMillan, final words.
Well, I think it takes a lot of humility, actually, to accept a mentor also. And I think that if anybody out there is listening, feeling kind of, you know, a little adrift or not really sure where to go next in life, don't wait till things get bad. If you ask somebody to be a mentor, somebody you trust, that's a great honor. And you'd be surprised how many people would be happy to be a mentor and to talk to you. But even if it's not in some kind of a formal program, reaching out to ask somebody to help you and to be a mentor and talk and listen to you may really help to get you on the right track. So,
very good. All right. John,
just one last word that I hope everyone here and those listening to us try to press on the young people that they come in contact daily. There's only one person capable of setting limits on your growth and success, and that person is you, them. Show them that they are not held back by the thems of them of the world they think are holding them down. It's your input of what you believe in yourself. That voice, as we said to DeAndre, talking to you. Listen to the voice of reason that's trying to say there's another way. You can get out of this, and there is hope and help here for you.
Awesome. Everybody, Dan, Rick, Brian, John, Aisha, DeAndre, thank you so much for being a part of today's program. If you missed it, you can hear the podcast at FlagstaffBroadcasting.com and on the Flagler Radio mobile app. Coming up tonight, Matanzas is hosting St. Augustine here at Live here on WNZF.